This is the Biz News Podcast, one-on-one conversations with experts in business and personal development.
Well, here's some good news. Perhaps a third of your workers are actually engaged in their work. As for the rest, well, nearly one out of five of the people you're paying is busy trying to find a new employer. The figures are from Gallup, which has been measuring worker engagement for years, and they're actually a tad better than they used to be. But how do you boost worker engagement, get their sincere buy-in, retain top talent, and recruit in these days of fewer talented workers? Logan Loomis says he has the equation, and he tells us what it is in Biz News Interviews. Let's start by telling our listeners and viewers a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've had a very unusual career, actually. I spent the first better part of 10 years as an attorney, and the most part of that in a large New Orleans law firm. And at one point was asked to go in-house with one of my clients as their regulatory lawyer. And one day the CEO asked me if I would head up sales and marketing. And I reminded him that I was his lawyer. And he said, I know, but we're having a major top line problem. So I think you could help us out. And so I transitioned over on to the business side and found out what was really going to be my passion. We built that into an Inc. 100 company, at that time, one of the 100 fastest growing privately held companies in the US. And that then led me to build a company in the natural gas industry for the Montana Power Company. And when that industry changed radically into a commoditized industry, which, and I'm a strong relationship and customer relationship guy, I started a management consulting practice because I had found a passion for building businesses and unlocking performance potential in people. So in the early 90s, I started a management consulting practice. And that's what I've done for the last 30 years of my career.
And obviously with great success. And as part of that, though, you've also written a couple of books, the most recent of which is, what, Getting the People Equation Right? Is this a math book?
It's not a math book per se. However, it is advocating that we do bring math into our hiring process, into the concept of people analytics. And people analytics is something that when I wrote the first book, this is the second edition, it was just beginning to be introduced into the HR conversation. And with the really terrific work that Google and companies like Facebook with their big data have done in bringing data into analyzing human relationship or human capital problems, or opportunities, it's become very mainstream. And so the second edition is picking up in, I think, a more comprehensive way what I started 12 years ago. And when you talk about bringing math into it, what we're really talking about is there's a human capital issue. And the issue I focus on is, how do you get the right people in the right jobs? And can we bring data to that decision? And with the advent of technology and the capability to have sophisticated algorithms, you can bring data into it. And so that's really what people analytics is. And so the people equation itself is a three-part equation. It deals with the concept of eligibility, which is what we historically have hired people on. It's your skill, experience, education, and training, what we see in a resume, which is basically the best data we had. And at the same time, there's some conflict. We may be good at something, but is it really a strength? And one of the things that I define a strength is, are you good at it and do you like doing it? And so as you start looking at that, and that's the second part of the equation, is suitability, your attitude toward the activities in a job. And that's, you need people analytics. You need good data in order to determine, not only am I good at something, you can see your capability on a resume, but am I going to have the attitude toward the job activities that are really going to make you want to engage in that job? And there's a lot of data out now and a lot of discussion over people not being engaged in their jobs. You know, quiet quitting is a new topic. But if we really think about it, if you like the activities in a job, you're naturally engaged in the job. And so what we want to do is build people in our companies who are capable and who enjoy the activities in the job, because that's going to create a high probability of success.
How do you get that data in these days of everyone afraid to give out any sort of reference for a former employee, lest they hear the knocking of attorneys at their door? And I ask you that as a recovering attorney, of course.
Oh, you know, I think one thing that you have to look at as far as references is they're always suspect. You know, are you going to really get the candid view of how the person performed? But you can see from a resume if the person has had the experiences that you're looking for. And then I think that's where, then going into data creates the objectivity that you need to see if that person is really suited for the job.
One of the things we like to think of ourselves as are good hiring managers, but it sounds like we could even be dullards if we had the right equations.
You know, I don't think that you take hiring managers out of the equation. And one of the things I talk about, there are really three elements of making a hiring decision. There's really four elements. First, are you eligible? Do you have the capability to do the job? Are you suited for the activities in the job? Do you enjoy them and have a probability of success in that regard? Do we like them? And likability is important, but we can like someone, and there's a psychological dynamic that we all have. We make, as quickly as you snap your fingers, you make like decisions. And then as human beings, what we tend to do is we then tend to impute all of these qualities. Doug, I like you, and so you're going to be good at this and that. Then we hire the person and find out that the reality is they have none of those qualities, and we imputed to them without really having any basis for imputing it other than we like them. But if you find somebody who has capability and is suited for the job and you like them, you're increasing the probability of success. Then you have to consider, do they fit your culture? And do they have shared values? Because if I'm suited for the job, but I don't like the culture, I'm not likely to stay in the job. So the people equation, as I've defined it, is actually eligibility plus suitability plus culture equals a high probability of success.
So when the job applicant is sitting across the desk from you, you have some pretty serious ground to plow in terms of your questions, don't you?
When you have data, you do. And, you know, so it's a matter of, and the way I use a database called the Harrison Assessment, which has proved to be highly predictive over the last 22 years that I've used it. And you can look at traits where people have some resistance to an activity. Then the question becomes, how do they manage that? And how often do they have to do the activity? So just to use me as an example, I was a very successful lawyer. You notice I don't practice law any longer, haven't for a long time. I was very good at it, but one of the attributes of one of the activities I did was attention to detail. And I did that work 10 hours a day. If you looked at my data, you would see, and I wish I'd had the data before I committed to law, and at least to those activities, is attention to detail. I am not naturally attentive to detail. I happened to have extremely high self-motivation, so I managed the attention to detail. I call it my nose to the grindstone generation or decade, because I pushed through and did it. But when I had the opportunity to do something else, I naturally took it. And we don't want people to feel that they're pushing through when they have a different opportunity, they're going to go and do that. We want people who are going to be very satisfied in the job and very satisfied in the culture.
Many a CEO that we have talked with over the years, not just post-pandemic, but pre-pandemic, said, we just can't find qualified talent to hire. What are you hearing from your clients?
Well, and actually, it's not just my clients, which would mirror that sentiment as well, but there's research I discuss in the book that says we do have a talent crisis. There are not going to be enough people, particularly technical people, to fill the jobs that we have in the Western economies. And so the second part of the book is, you've got the right people, you found the person, how do you keep them? And leadership becomes critical today because it's a scarce resource. And if you get somebody who can do the job, the next question is, do they want to do the job for you? And that means you have to develop your capability as a leader to lead in a way that is going to have people want to work for you and stay with your business, that you're investing the time and energy in developing them.
So businesses really should not be letting up on their training of their managers then.
Absolutely not. I just was with, was asked to join a launch of an internal leadership development program at one of my clients that is a recognized champion in culture. And they're investing a lot in having their young leaders lead in the right way and to develop that talent of leadership. You know, a lot of times, and this, I mean, I'm obviously generationally removed from the people who are entering the workforce today, but when I was learning, it was just you get thrown in the deep end of the pool, and you learn as you go, and that's not and you make mistakes that you could avoid if you just told somebody make this commitment, learn this skill, and you are going to be more effective in taking this very precious resource we're giving you and creating an environment where they're going to want to stay and where they're going to grow.
I do remember the being thrown into the deep end of the pool a number of times myself. These days, though, with competition as fierce as it is, companies would be idiotic to continue that practice.
I believe they are. And, you know, one of the stories I talk about in the book is, because you're talking about competition, talented people have opportunities. Do they want to stay with you or do they want to go someplace else? And I got a call from a really talented person at one of my clients who I've done some executive coaching with over the years. And she had gotten just the financial offer that was so compelling. And she was calling me and I said, well, that's a really compelling offer. And she said, but I'm struggling with it. And can you help me understand why I'm struggling with it? So we talked through why she was struggling with it. And what it came down to was she felt very appreciated by the people that she worked for and worked with. And that was very valuable to her. And as I point out in the book, one of the commitments that I encourage leaders to make is a commitment to appreciation. And the other people had said the right things, but she was in that point of, but will they deliver on them? It's a promise to deliver, but I'm uncertain. And her husband was supportive with whatever she wanted to do. She ultimately decided to stay where she was to make less money because she felt so appreciated by the people who led her and who she worked with.
And that company perhaps ought to be thinking it might want to boost the pay a little bit. To keep
well, you know, and she was actually paid above scale. She was not unhappy with her pay at all. They do pay above scale. And so it was just the other company was coming in and throwing a lot of money at her. And, you know, there's a point where you, in equity, you if you pay above scale, you have to be fair to everybody. And to keep somebody, you're not necessarily going to change your pay scale. But one thing that I do point out in the book is pay is not the major determinant of whether somebody's going to stay with you. It is at certain economic levels, but for the most part, it's it's other factors that make people stay in a company. And that's those are the factors that leaders who are going to be very effective in retaining and developing talent need to fully develop in themselves. And so in part two of the book, I list five commitments that leaders can make. And I make it a commitment because it's something that when things get difficult, you still need to stay with. It needs to be a serious commitment for you to grow in these areas. And if you grow in the areas, and the research shows each area is compelling to people staying in a job, you are going to be not only an effective leader, but a leader who can retain talent, which, as you point out, and which my clients are telling me, and basically the research is showing, talent is a very, very scarce resource. It was not when I was early in my career, and you may have had the same experience, Douglas.
No, we had certain jobs in television that were extremely hard to fill. And other jobs were, you know, people were dropping in out of the blue, seemingly by the minute. It was very odd, I thought. You must have a website where people can get more information about you and your books.
I do. It's loganlumis.com.
Very simple.
The book is on there, and there's a blog and information on people analytics, so your listeners can tour the website. They can also use that to contact me, and I'm always delighted to help anybody who wants to be better at selecting talent and keeping talent.
Logan, what would you like to add that we haven't talked about?
Let's talk about culture just a little bit. Because I think a lot of times people discount culture. Everybody has a culture. I'm not sure it's a conscious culture, but culture is paradoxical. There are two polarities to it. One is you focus on quality, customer relationships, delivering good qualities, delivering profitability, all very, very important in a business. The balancing quality of the paradox, the interdependent quality of the paradox, is focusing on people and creating an environment where the people who are delivering the service are on equal priority to the processes, the efficiency, the profitability. And so leaders who focus on creating a balanced culture are those that get the best places to work. Designations. And one thing that you find is that the companies that are the best places to work also are the most profitable places. And so if you really want to develop profitability, focus on both sides of the paradoxical paradoxical elements to create a balanced culture. And that's going to be almost universally attractive to people.
You've been watching the Biz News Podcast. We welcome your input. Send your email to editor@biznews.com. Thanks for watching.